it's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 25th of November 2017. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. The show is brought to you with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 25th of November, Greg Tribwell talked to Ruth Evans from Waiheke Cinema about the movie Rumble. And he talked about transport with local board member Sharon Brown.
This is Island Life. I'm your host, Greg Treadwell. In the studio with me this morning, Ruth Evans from Waiheke Community Cinema. Ruth has come into the studio this morning to talk about a very special movie that's going to be playing at the Waiheke Community Cinema very early next month, which is rushing up on us. So, kia ora. Good morning, Ruth. Thanks so very much for coming in.
Thank you, Greg.
Now, look, I didn't think there were any more stories to tell about rock and roll. I thought documentaries had done rock and roll to death, but this is actually quite extraordinary. Tell us about Rumble, the movie that's coming up on the island.
Okay, well, there are always more stories to tell about rock and roll if you find the right people, I reckon.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I discovered this gem of a movie, a documentary, in the International Film Festival. Went over there and had a choice of one and chose this. Really didn't know much about what it was about.
So you
went
over to choose it?
No, I went over to see it.
To see
it. Yeah, it was my choice. And it just blew me away. It got a standing ovation and it was called Rumble, How the Indians Rocked the World. And I guess the backstory of Rumble is there was a guitarist, a guy called Steve Salas, who used to play around. And I think he used to back, who was it? Oh, some pretty out there musician.
There are all sorts of names.
Actually, Rod Stewart, of all people, he used to back.
There are all sorts of names associated with this movie, aren't there?
Heaps. And he was touring around America and thought, how come I'm not finding any other Native American musicians? Mm. And he's actually the executive director of this film, Rumble. So he decided, bugger it, I'm going to do some research and find who else from my culture has been playing a main part in, you know, rock music. So
They were very Amerindians, indigenous American Indians. Never really had a high profile at all, did they?
No.
Whatever they were doing for so many years. So there's so many untold stories, and this is just an incredible one.
Exactly. And the American and Canadian government actually banned any Native American music events, dance events. They were trying to eradicate them, basically. This is an incredibly political movie.
Yeah.
And featuring, as you say, some amazing names. Like, I had no idea Jimi Hendrix had American Indian blood in him, you know. Yeah. Robbie Robertson.
He used to wear feathers in his hats.
He did. So, yeah, we should have been smarter and got the cue.
We probably should have picked that up, yeah.
But also, just this movie is a documentary and it goes right back to the roots. And the movie starts with Link Wray, who is an amazing guy.
He's a guitarist.
He was standing there with his tight black pants, legs spread, open neck shirt, hair done back in an Elvis style, and he does one chord on the guitar.
Yeah.
And that is the track that's called Rumble. It's a total, there's no vocals in it. And that was seen as so subversive and so scary, the sound he gets out of that guitar. And I think he poked all sort of holes in his amps and God knows what to get it. But they saw it was as so subversive that they actually banned it. They thought it was going to incite riots and violence.
The track Rumble, and I'll try and find it so we can play at least a little bit of it for our
At least
listeners.
The opening note.
Yeah, because Rumble, the song itself, was controversial. They tried to ban it. And yet there are no words.
No, there are
it's
no words.
It's an entirely instrumental track.
It is that sound.
So why was the sound so upsetting? Or not, upsetting is the wrong word. But why did the authorities think that sound needed suppressing? That's a terribly fascistic kind of approach to music.
It is. But I guess it was that powerful. It was a cry. It's been described. That chord has been described as a cry for Indian people, Native American people.
Okay, let's just
really
play,
powerful.
Before we go and talk more about the movie, let's just play a little bit of Rumble.
Fantastic.
If I can just get the buttons right, here we go. Let's see if this is the opening few bars. I'll let it play for a little while because it's a pretty amazing song.
Yeah.
so it kind of goes on like that. But yeah. It sounds a bit ordinary to us these days, but back then this was a sort of emotional rumble, yeah, wasn't it?
Absolutely. You play that up loud,
yeah.
It's loud and dirty, and it's saying some things.
Yeah.
It's saying, we are not happy. Yeah. We're in pain. Take notice. And I know with jazz too, the early jazz history, jazz was banned. Bebop was banned. Yeah. You know, kids dancing in the aisles and concerts was banned. Preachers were trying to shut down the whole jazz movement because it was from the devil.
Yeah. And even jazz.
Even jazz, yeah. So music is powerful and music is political. And it's been seen by the establishment and status quo as a big threat right throughout history, really. Especially from young people.
Yeah, well,
trying to make a statement, you know?
My wife and I are watching a most wonderful Netflix series at the moment called The Get Down, which is about the beginning when soul shifted into soul and R&B shifted into hip-hop. Even the politics around that are just extraordinary and the suppression and so on. Music is entirely, well, not entirely perhaps, but very much
It can be rolled up in politics.
So there are some incredible people in this movie who are interviewed in the movie for their opinions, I suppose, on the influence that Indigenous American musicians in the rock and roll movement had on them. And these include people like Tony Bennett, Robbie Robertson, Buddy Guy, Steven Tyler. I could probably go without Steven Tyler.
Depends on your taste.
But it depends on your taste. Iggy Pop, Quincy Jones, Slash, Taj Mahal. These people are all part of the movie because they are passionate about the Indigenous influence on their own music.
Exactly. And Pete Townsend from The Who said Link Ray is king. And he said, I would never have picked up a guitar if it hadn't been for Link Ray. So they're the sort of influences, that come out of the movie.
He was almost a kind of Elvis figure, wasn't he?
He was.
He kind of wore a jumpsuit. I saw some YouTube. Yeah. There's wonderful YouTube footage of him still. Yeah. He's got a gold medallion of some sort on his hairy chest. Oh, he's just
standard practice in those days, Greg.
Gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
And so what do you think, apart from the politics around the it's about a mystery, isn't it? It's about the lack of recognition of this wonderful influence in our music.
Exactly.
And so overall, how does the film leave you feeling?
I'll just share one particular moment for me that was really touching, and it was four older women singing their Native American music, four-part harmony, a cappella. And it just brought tears to my eyes. It was so touching, you know? It was just brilliant.
The two people who have made this are Steve Salas.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's a woman called Christina Fon, and she's not so much the musician like Steve. She's more the
researcher,
documentary maker.
Maybe.
But she's also Indigenous American.
Yes.
So this movie went on, I believe, to win a Sundance Award for Masterful Storytelling.
It's won nine awards, actually.
Wow.
Got two Sundance Awards. So it's been doing well.
And we're lucky enough to see it on the island when, Ruth?
1st of December, 8 p.m.
Now that's rushing up. We're on the 25th today, are we?
Yeah,
25,
something like
26,
that. It's all a bit of a blur,
so it's about a week
away,
the first show.
Is
this in the main cinema or the little
It's in the main cinema, and we're only having four screenings. So please come,
your
mates. You will not be disappointed.
Four screenings.
It's an amazing movie.
Bookings might be recommended?
Absolutely.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So, and what's the phone number for bookings?
4240 372 4240
4240 If you want to book one of the comfy couches at Waihiki Community Cinema for this amazing movie, and I'll find some of the songs, some of the music, and we'll play that a bit later, and we'll keep referring back to this morning, I think, because it's such a great story. Can't what I've seen of it so far, I can't recommend it enough. I'm going to be going through what's on at the cinema for listeners anyway at some point, but any other news, Ruth, from the cinema you'd like to share?
Just come along and support us.
Yeah.
Our numbers have been a wee bit down lately.
Have they?
And we try and provide for all sectors of the community.
Absolutely.
So just come along and support us. We're a great little community trust, great organisation.
Amazing.
We need your support.
Amazing cinema with all sorts of different things going on, from spiritual cinema that's been running for more than 10 years. The Little Cinema's been developed recently. There's a variety of shows, great kids shows. I know Captain Underpants is on at the moment, very popular in our house.
Outdoor cinema coming up again, January, February,
January,
four screenings.
Yeah. This is at the back of the library between
the
theatre and the...
Yep, absolutely.
That happened last year too.
Yeah, it's happened for years now. So come along and support that.
It began,
bring a picnic, bring your rug.
Yeah, it began out at Onatangi, didn't it?
I think it did.
The outdoor long before cinema my time. With a couple who've left the island, but they started it many, many years ago. Ruth Evans, thank you so much for coming in and joining us on Island Life this morning. That movie sounds incredible, and I personally cannot wait to see it. Thanks very much, Ruth.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
In the studio with us this morning, we now have Shirin Brown. Shirin Brown, of course, is on the Waiheke Local Board. She's been on there a couple of terms and a very active and busy Waiheke politician. And I've asked Shirin to come in this morning because I wanted to have a chat about transport on the island. I think Shirin's got some other stuff she wants to talk about. But in a very friendly way, Shirin suggested that I was being a bit sensationalist by asking if people on Facebook, asking if people were shocked by the numbers of cars on the island these days, and I accept that's a sensationalist approach because there are things really to be shocked about, as Shirin points out, the level of peer abuse on the island and so on and so on. So let's bring it back to what it really is, which is a transport issue, and I accept that. But good morning, Shirin Brown. And I must actually, before I let you speak, remind our listeners that Shirin is a former Island Life host. So welcome back to the studio.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. Yes, I do miss doing Island Life. It's such a lovely show and I love talking to all the people and... Yeah, great. Now, just before we start, can I just say just a plug for Living Without Violence? I don't know if you've had someone on this.
We had
this
Ruth Evans talking about. Ruth is involved in Living Without Violence and the cinema. And this morning we were talking about a movie that's coming up. So there's news for Living Without Violence.
I just wanted to do a plug for White Ribbon Day. So Peter Knight's down at Placemakers. They've just done a big run. They've just done a big trip to Onitangi on the hot rods and the cars and people. And there's a free sausage. Free sausage sizzle at 11:15 to 12, and people can just go down there and show their support for violence-free lives.
Violence-free lives.
Great.
We need those.
We really do. I mean, it's amazing how angry one can get over the most... the tiniest things.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to talking about those things, I'm sure. Let's talk about transport, Shirin, because summer's coming. In fact, the weather's warmed up, and this weekend, I think, was the first weekend where the Friday afternoon crowds really came. So I think the island's heaving today and will only increase in numbers, particularly visitors. Residents are reasonably steady, batch owners come and go, and then day trippers and New Zealand and international visitors push those numbers up into the 20, and sometimes people say 30,000 people on the island over summer. So what are the major transport issues as you see them? Let's start there. What are our major transport issues?
Okay, well, yeah, there's a few different ones. Firstly, I think it's the volume of cars on the island in the summer. And I think that's why we all just have to be really aware of that. And I think we are. Sometimes I find myself forgetting that I'm in a rush on a Saturday morning, like, for example, to get here. And then suddenly there's a queue getting into Oniroa because people are trying to get across the pedestrian crossing. So definitely more cars. And in a way, having to put up with a more Auckland experience, in the sense that you have to wait to get onto some of the main roads, like Seaview Road, or get onto the main road at the different touching points like Goodwin Avenue. I think the other major thing that I see is a tension between a bus service that's used for visitors and tourists, and a bus service that's used for commuters and locals.
Are you suggesting there should be two?
Well, I think they kind of subsidize each other in a way. I mean, so, you know, potentially we can have a better service for the public if we've got the numbers that are catered to by having the visitors come on board. But there is a tension. So, for example, the fact that the bus doesn't leave Maitiatia for another, 10, 15 minutes after the ferries arrive.
Well, on that point, being a bus user, my personal irritation is not important, but I can tell you people around me on the bus waiting for that. I mean, the ferry is 35 minutes and then you wait almost half that time before the bus even leaves.
I know. And the reason they've done that is because in the summer, there are a lot more people getting off the ferries, and so they want the buses to leave on time. So by changing the bus timetable to accommodate that, they're able to make the bus leave on time. But that's what I'm saying about the tension. We're trying to encourage people out of cars, but I'm the same. If I'm in a rush, I don't particularly want to have to wait 15 minutes on a bus in the same way that which is fine if you're on holiday. And so, I think there is a sort of a, now whether one were to say, okay, look, the buses actually leave exactly on, leave at 5 minutes after the ferry lands. If you're a commuter, you make sure you're at the front of those queues. A lot of us stand up already. We're ready to get off. The bus were to leave earlier. And then guess what? The visitors have to wait for the next bus. So they're actually already sitting on the bus waiting for the next bus. But, that would... Yeah, that's easy for us to say. I don't know how one would pull that off. But I think that
it is true that transport on this island has to cater for a variety of categories of transport user, because commuters are different to holidaymakers.
And we have those two very distinctive groups.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And not just commuters, but Waiheke residents who might want to just travel around within the island and not actually go to Maitiatia.
Yes. Which brings me to my next point, which is that they're doing a bus consultation and a bus review in February. And it's really important that people who either plan to use the buses or already use the buses fill out that, go online, see what's being proposed, and do the survey.
Okay.
I think there'll be hard copies as well, and more about that as the time comes.
Well, as that gets closer, we might get you back on air to talk about that, because I think that, if we have a sort of people power opinion on transport, it could shift things.
Well, it'll be really interesting, because they're looking at a direct service from Rocky Bay. They're looking at a bus service from Kennedy Point to Oniroa, if not also to Maitiatia.
That's been missing a long time since KP's got popular with foot passengers.
I guess my feeling is, which they haven't proposed and I think is a really potentially a useful thing, is actually a loop bus that deals more for locals, so that took in, for example, KP, but also took in Ostend and Oniroa.
Right.
At the moment, the proposal is from KP only to Oniroa, but I do think there's space for that ring road, and that way for people who want to do their shopping, just go for a coffee, don't want to get involved in in ferry traffic and passengers, that could be a good solution.
Is there an argument here for two types of public transport? The controversial double deckers are back on the island rolling around, and they I see them go past empty, to be honest, but when they're full, they're really full. And so maybe big buses appropriate for visitors, but is there a case for a smaller style of vehicle doing more regular runs as a sort of public transport service?
So I think they will have half-hour runs in to different places mostly. I don't know about small vehicles. I think there's an issue with bus drivers and having sufficient people to use the buses. And I guess, for a public service, you want something that's capable of dealing with slightly bigger numbers if there are bigger numbers.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that small buses has ever been something that... I know the islands talked about it. I'm not sure it's actually really realistically gone on people's radar.
Yeah. Is there a sense here, and this is just a thought really, but is there a sense here that Auckland Council and authorities on the mainland have re-delegated transport responsibilities to the ferry operator?
Sorry, say that again.
So, is it quite convenient for Auckland Council and the authorities over there in New Zealand to leave it to Fullers?
Look, I actually think, working on the inside, obviously Fullers are the people who are knowledgeable in the space, but I do think that, you know, Auckland Transport does make a distinction between their responsibilities and Fuller's responsibilities. Mm-hmm. The biggest issue we've got, and I don't think people really understand this fully, is that both the service at Kennedy Point and the service at Matiati, the ferry services, are purely commercial. Mm. Purely commercial. That means that there's a limit to the kinds of questions that AT can ask of Fullers.
It's one of the fundamental issues, isn't it?
But it really is. And I really worry about us being in a potentially precarious situation. You know, if fuel prices go up a lot, you know, if there are changes to how Waiheke is seen as a destination, will that affect whether a service, you know, wants to continue here? Because there is no guaranteed service. And I think for me, into the future, that's a real worry. And I don't
think no guaranteed service, you mean buses? You mean ferries?
No, I'm talking about the ferries.
Yeah, yeah. That is but they're both owned by Fullers. So, I mean, the Waiheke Bus Company is a subsidiary, sure, but ultimately owned by Fullers. So if you're talking about precarious...
But the bus service is a public transport bus service.
So which
it's
means
actually
it's subsidized.
Regulated. Well, it's not so much about being subsidized, which it is, but it's more that it's regulated. So it has to run to a certain timetable. Yeah. It has to charge a certain fare, and it's a guaranteed service. Yeah. And we have it.
The 15 other, minutes late, but guaranteed.
Yeah. I thought they run generally on time.
Oh, no, I didn't mean the buses.
Oh,
I think the buses are wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you're just saying
just having another dig at the 15-minute wait.
Having to wait, But for example, you know, in the summer, we've pretty much got our slots maxed out at KP, right, for cars coming onto the island. So in one way, that's really, you know, positive, because it means that you've got a limited number of cars who can come on, because it's limited not by regulation, but by how many ferries bring the cars over.
Yeah.
But in another way, it's, well, you know, if there was capacity for more service, or we needed more freight, or there was something else, all of that is also limited by the ferry company.
Indeed.
There's no obligation on them to provide more services because there are more people on the island. Or
and without going into the whole ferry schnall, because that's all tied up with whether Fullers is or is not subject to the government's public transport operating PTOM or whatever it's called. So leaving that sort of very gnarly, deep issue aside, because that goes right to central government, but in terms of local transport on the island, I wonder if... I think the biggest issue, if you had to name one, is just the simply the number of vehicles on the island. I mean, some people have a lot of problems with the size of some trucks. Some people have but ultimately, the number is what's a bit frightening at this end of summer, because we're not even in the busy period, and it's like Blockhouse Bay Road out there sometimes. Mm. So I wonder what your view is, Sharon, on the idea of, and if taxes is a very unpopular word, so let's call it a levy. And let's say maybe a small levy on vehicles as they arrive at KP if they don't have a residence sticker. One, that for me, that would do two things. It would reduce the number of cars, because at least some people would say, oh, let's not take the car, it's an extra cost, you know. So let's just go and have a nice weekend on Waiheke and use public transport. But secondly, a levy could create a fund for our transport problems. Now, I don't know that the New Zealand regulatory system is flexible enough for that, because if Waiheke says we want to do something different, the answer we tend to get is, well, nobody else is allowed to do that, so why should you? Is that a problem that we've got? Is that a situation that you think we're stuck in?
I certainly think, as you say, it's an opportunity. You know, why wouldn't you? Switzerland, if you go into Switzerland, you have to pay road user charges. And it doesn't matter if you're only there for 5 minutes or you're there for a year, you pay road user charges. So, I mean, I think it would be great to have those kinds of opportunities.
But that's a whole country, and they can say these are our national
Absolutely.
Rules. It seems to me the problem we have is that our national rules aren't flexible enough to allow very important local idiosyncrasies like Waiheke.
Yeah, and that's why we talk about a levy rather than a tax, because a levy is something that could be administered more locally.
Yep.
And so, you know, the way we've been looking at a levy as the local board is to say, what about a levy that's administered through the wharf tax or that mechanism? Because that mechanism is already there, but to collect stuff that would be available. And it's not just about transport, it's also about infrastructure. So, for example, we do need more public toilets in Oniroa. They're extremely expensive to put in. We'd completely blow our local budget if we put in the toilets. So we need support from Auckland Council or the government. The government, or certainly the last government, was like, well, you know, you're part of Auckland Council. The money that we've got for infrastructure is actually for us to deal with Tekapo or other places that don't have as much revenue as Auckland Council has. And Auckland Council goes, well, you know, you're a population of 7,000 people, so we're not going to be giving you like heaps of money, you know, to do all of that. So there's a disconnect between the infrastructure we need for visitors. And so that was one of the approaches that we've got to doing it. I think in relation to cars, just to get back to an earlier point, the other issue is that, you know, our population hasn't increased by that much, but there's massive pressure on car parks down at Matiatia. And if you talk to the parking wardens, they say, yeah, well, what's happening is that instead of just having one car in a family, people have got two cars for the adults. And then as the kids are getting older, they've got a car or a scooter as well. And people aren't thinking, you know, do I actually need to drive down, or could I share a lift with someone else, or could I bike down? Or they're just, you know, if you look at those car parks, they tend to get maxed out by the 7:30 and the 8 o'clock and the 8:30 ferry.
Absolutely.
And everyone just drives down.
Absolutely.
And then beyond that, everyone else has to kind of...
What is it about the buses in the morning? Why aren't people taking the buses? Because I take the bus, I commute to Auckland, not every day, but a lot of days, and I take the bus and I think it's pretty easy.
I don't know. I think people just can't be bothered. I do think there's a culture in New Zealand.
It's more of a bother to find a car park.
Yeah, but I think if you're travelling on those early ferries, you can have your cake and eat it too,
right,
too, because you can pretty much just, you know, drive your car down, walk out, walk back. You don't have to think about what ferry I'm on. Mm. Certainly those later ferries, the 10 and the 11 and the 12, it takes 45 minutes to get from Surfdale to, or half an hour, and then you've got a 15-minute wait for the ferry. So they're really the ones that I think people would like to be able to drive down, but they can't because all the car parks are full by then.
Again, this is the problems that locals have caused by, if you like, locals.
Well,
but
I think
the problems
so,
we know. All have caused by the number of visitor cars, you know, not wanting to just beat a drum, but actually if locals can find a car park, why not? But if visitors bring their cars every time, we become a place with far more cars than people on average, you know. Mm. So in summer, sure, the population climbs into the 20-something thousand in summer.
I mean, the other thing is, who are the visitors? I mean, I think that's another question we have to ask ourselves, because a lot of them are absentee ratepayers who are coming here in the summer to enjoy their properties.
Yeah, true.
So they're not actually visitors. A lot of the visitors do actually... you know, we get far more visitors. There was a 45% increase in visitor numbers through Matiatia, not so much through Kennedy Point. So I do think there's actually just a higher volume of cars and vehicles on the island all year. Because
It
used to be the case that in winter, it was actually pretty easy to get a park.
Yeah.
And that's no longer the case.
No, it's not.
So I do think that even the people who live here are not really thinking things through in a way that, you know, they could maybe change the way they do things.
Can we talk for a moment in a sort of visionary way about the future, Sharon? Do you think, can you see a future when the island is mostly electric vehicles?
Well, I suppose eventually the world will be mostly electrical vehicles.
So is the council doing any planning around that?
Well, they're trialling a whole bunch of electrical vehicles, and I think the Auckland Council fleet is electrical vehicles.
Yeah.
They're putting in more of those refueling.
Yeah, charging stations.
Charging stations.
So has anybody, have you guys on the board talked about charging stations for the island at all?
We have. Again, it's local board money and, you know.
There isn't much of that, is there?
No. So it sort of goes round and round. But it's certainly been a discussion with the WRT and the Sustainability Centre, and I think that's going to be coming in. Certainly in Europe, you can see charging stations quite regularly, and I think there are some in parts of Auckland.
It just seems to me that given the...
So one of the suggestions was to put something in near either Onitangi or Ostend. Onitangi because it's the halfway point. And the thing about these charging stations is most people would charge their car at home, which is a sort of an overnight charge. But the charging stations can do things in an hour or two, so potentially you can just charge your car, wander off, come back. And
so
I think there is someone
go into the village, park up, charge up, have a coffee, and you've got a bit more fuel to get home. It seems that Waiheke, being a sort of limited circumference place, it would seem ideal for electric vehicles. There's a growing number of EVs on the island. You know, if you look out for vehicles called the Leaf, the Toyota Leaf is entirely electric. It's not a hybrid. And a friend of mine's got one. I had a drive of it. It's just incredible.
They're so silent, aren't they?
Not only that, but they have such a pull. You sort of expect it to get up to speed like a sewing machine, or, you know, but it doesn't. It just it takes off like a. It's got more torque than my Toyota Corolla. So.
Well, they certainly say there's new generation ones. It's actually got all of that pull, and some of them have the capacity of like a four-wheel drive. They're actually much, much more powerful, and the charge is holding much better. I know people replacing their cars, and a lot of people I know are replacing them with EVs.
Yeah, I think there may or may not have been a whole lot of pressure from the oil industry to delay the introduction of EVs, and I'm sure there was, but you'll never really know. But they're coming, aren't they?
Well, I think also the car industry was also probably putting that pressure on. But now that they're, you know, capable of seeing that they can make some money out of electric cars, then, yeah, they'll make the switch. I was told by someone, though, that the wear on an electric car is far less because it doesn't have that same combustion.
It hardly has moving parts.
Mechanism. And so, you know, that's another issue because the money's made out of things crapping out rather than,
right.
I just wanted to say one more thing about visitors. One of the strategies that I think could really work is encouraging visitors to come and have walking holidays and cycling holidays on the island rather than everybody bringing their car. But for that to happen, some better cycling infrastructure. So I think it's all kind of connected.
So how... in what way? You mean more?
Well, I think, for example, when the Tourism Forum do advertising, for example, they could do campaigns around, you know, bring your bike, have a walking holiday. I think it's about how we project Waiheke, not just come to Waiheke.
Sure.
And, you know, but you know, suggesting to people how they might come or that they don't need a car. Because people who haven't been here before, who come from other parts of New Zealand, might assume that you have to have a car because everywhere you go in New Zealand, you need a car.
Yeah.
But they might not realise that you could actually just park your car at Half Moon Bay and come and spend some days here and then pick up your car on the other side.
Electric assisted bicycles are great, aren't
they?
For
Waiheke,
aren't they perfect?
Yeah, and I have to say the bike, you know, Darlene and e-cycles have done a huge, you know, made a huge push for people to switch to e-cycles.
Yeah, and Claude Lewins too, I believe, brought in a whole number of convertible kind of engine kits and stuff.
Oh, did he?
I'm trying to sort of seed the idea through the island. It appears to be taking off, to be honest. There's a huge number of EVs go past every day, really. So some gnarly issues, but some planning underway. How do we get a kind of... how do we get an easier route to the transport nirvana? Because it seems there's always these blockages. What's...
I don't think there are any easy routes because I think part of the issue is that Waiheke is, you know, an island and it's part of Auckland, which is 1.6 million people. And so sometimes that communication isn't, you know, the best. And also it just costs to make those changes. And the other thing is that people are very, very attached to their cars. And even things like when we talk about putting footpaths in front of shops, as in Putiki Road, the shop owners say, well, you know, we don't want a footpath. We want better access for vehicles. And I think there's a bit of a mindset here where we see cyclists and walkers as slowing us down and in the way, rather than...
As we rush to where?
Yeah. Rather than, you know, and not appropriate for road use, rather than actually part of the solution. Because obviously, even if you're not on a bike, if other people are on a bike, you're more likely to find a car park.
Yeah, that's right. So, that seems a great moment to finish the transport conversation. But before I let you go, a couple of other things. This week, we're going to hear from the Local Government Commission.
Ah, yeah, that's more John's
thing. I know, but you're on the board, and I just wondered if you wanted to encourage people to come to this meeting. I opened the show with my view that the idea of a ban on media is just ridiculous at this meeting. I cannot understand that. One, who's a journalist these days anyway? Everybody is going to get straight out onto Facebook and report the meeting correctly or incorrectly, with two sides or not two sides, with bias or not bias. So what's wrong with having trained professional media people there to try and do the best job they can in telling the whole story?
I totally agree. I mean, yeah.
I mean, I don't really understand how the local government commission thinks it can ban me.
Yeah. I don't think it can. And in any case, you could also just invoke your citizen journalist capacity and still do a better job. As a resident of Waiheke, totally recommend that.
Yeah, so I'm going to be a little bit anarchic here, and I'm going to encourage media to go, because I don't think the Local Government Commission has the right to block media from a public meeting. So I hope the media does go out. I hope Gulf News and the Marketplace and maybe even Waiheke Radio gets along there and insists that they have the right to cover this meeting, because it's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or something, and there'll be a whole lot of people in Auckland can't make that meeting who might be incredibly passionate about this issue, and why shouldn't they read about it in Gulf News?
Mm. Oh, I totally agree. Having said that, I mean, so separate issue. I mean, I think it'll be really interesting to see what they come out with, because the last comment was that it was going to be incredibly expensive for Waiheke to disengage.
Yes. I read that. Great letters in Gulf News about this this week. Too expensive to do, but...
I think for me, and I think we need to be really, really cognizant of this, you know... Independent Republic of Waiheke is a lovely romantic notion, and this is my personal view. However, and there is wastage in Auckland Council, as with any council, there is wastage.
Mm-hmm.
However, for me, Auckland Council do manage our risk. So when push comes to shove, I think we have less pressure from people trying to develop the island, because they maybe think twice that if they push the button too far, they're going to have Auckland Council to deal with. We have a
So actually, to have the big guys on our side is an advantage.
I think it is. And one of the great things about this whole process is I think it's resulted in us having a Waiheke pilot. It's resulted in us having a little bit more independence and the recognition that what works for Auckland doesn't necessarily work for Waiheke.
Yeah.
And that maybe we need different solutions in terms of the way the operations are dealt to. But I think we're getting that.
Yeah.
And I think it's been because of the push for an independent Waiheke. But whether we actually need to go that final step, I think we'll find it generates just as many problems for us as we have now.
Create problem as many as it solves.
Absolutely.
So,
but that's my view. I come to blows with other members of the board over this.
So. Well, that's Sharon's personal view on it. We're going to hear on Thursday what the Local Government Commission thinks about the idea of a separate Waiheke Council as we used to have under the Waiheke County Council. Of course, it'd be different, but I just make the point that we were once entirely independent.
Mm.
Anything else you want to mention?
Well, I was just going to say two things that, part of the issues that we have around transport, the double-deckers, and character that we all sort of feel and, relate to, could be dealt to in terms of the review of the Hauraki Gulf Island District Plan. So the plans are to incorporate that into the unitary plan.
Yep.
I think it's a space that we just need to watch quite carefully to make sure that we are able to communicate what those essential values are into the planning process. So that was the first thing. And then
it's great that essentially Waiheke is still influential, because when that document was first formed, about a month later, somebody pointed out, well, it hasn't really got any standing. It's not actually policy. But 10, 15 years later, it's still there and still influencing decision making.
Mm.
So those people who drafted that so many years ago, thank you very much.
Yes, absolutely. And then they did the refresh more recently.
There was a refresh, that's right.
I was a bit sceptical about the refresh, but, it has reiterated some of those values.
Mm.
I guess for me, it's people need to think through what those values actually mean, because, we can have those values, but then we don't really always agree on what that means on the ground. So for me, if we're saying that we want an essentially rural, natural environment, a marina is completely inconsistent with that.
Mm.
But there are people who will argue that actually, no, a marina is, enhancing the environment and... So even though we have the values, it doesn't always translate into things that are practicable in terms of actions.
Sure, but to have some kind of values document as a starting point.
Oh, absolutely,
Sharon Brown, thank you so much for coming and joining us on Island Life this morning.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7pm and Thursdays at 12:30pm. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onioroa.